The greatest story ever told is a true story. It is a story of adventures, battles, kings and queens, heroes and villains, good and evil, history and prophecy. It is your story. Come join the adventure of the Bible story. Chapter 106, Israel in Civil War. When Absalom's signal trumpet sounded, his allies around the nation proclaimed him king. "Absalom reigns in Hebron," they shouted. Now that the rebellion was out in the open, one city after another joined in. Letters of loyalty began arriving as local leaders pledged allegiance. In Hebron, some of Israel's best troops from the local garrison joined Absalom's cause. Soldiers from outlying areas began rushing in. Soon, Absalom would be ready to march on Jerusalem. Meanwhile, David was blindsided by Absalom's treachery. "He told me he was going to Hebron to worship God," David blurted. "How could I have been so gullible?" Immediately, David thought back to Nathan's prophetic words, "Evil shall be raised up against you from your own house." But there was little time for reflection. Messengers began arriving. Decisions were needed. The hearts of the people are with Absalom. One courier from a trusted advisor reported, "The conspiracy is strong," said another. David made up his mind quickly. If Absalom wanted him, he would have to come and get him. David could have ordered all the soldiers in Jerusalem to take up battle positions. Jerusalem was a strong city, and he could have decided to fight it out there. But instead, he decided to leave the city. There is no use making all the people suffer through a long siege or to endure unnecessary bloodshed, thought David. I have seen what war can do to a city. Plus, I don't know who to trust anymore. How can you defend a city when it might be filled with traitors? Tell my men to get ready to depart. We are leaving Jerusalem, David told the servant. If there's one thing I've learned from the many battles I have fought, it's better to have a small corps of loyal, dedicated fighters than a big army that isn't trustworthy. The king gave orders to his men. Pack as many supplies as you can. It might be a while before we can find refreshments, but we must move quickly. King David, his band of loyal soldiers, and their families now resembled a small army. The group included 600 men, whom David had brought with him from the Philistine city of Gath many years before, who were still loyal to him. The only people who stayed behind were 10 women left to take care of the palace while David was gone. As David watched his band of followers leave the city through the east gate, he was encouraged by how many had remained loyal to him, even though it appeared that they would all soon be hunted refugees. One such man was Ittai, the commander of David's personal guards, who was also in charge of the band of men from Gath. David told him that since he was a foreigner, he didn't have to take part in the fight and could stay with his family in Jerusalem. But Ittai refused. "Whether in life or death, where you are, there will I also be," he said. David was greatly encouraged by Ittai's faithfulness and happily consented to him coming. What a contrast to his rebellious son, Absalom. So, again, David was a man on the run. This time, not from a corrupt king, but an evil son. Crossing the Kidron Brook, David's ragtag army headed east toward the Mount of Olives and the wilderness beyond. Here, David paused to look back and was startled to see Zadok and Abithar, the priests, and all the Levites with them, carrying the Ark of the Covenant out of Jerusalem. Although he was moved by the loyalty of the two men, he was upset that they were removing the Ark. Recent events had humbled David. He kept thinking about Nathan's words. "Now, therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house." Why should the Ark be risked by moving it because of his sins? David understood that God chose Jerusalem, and he knew it would be wrong to take it upon himself to move the Ark. "The Ark belongs in Jerusalem," David told them. "It doesn't belong to me. If it is God's will, then I will see it again when I return. It is God who gives victories, not the Ark." David had completely resigned his fate to God. He had vibrant faith in God and his mercy. "Besides, you can do more to help me if you stay in Jerusalem," David told the priests. "Use your connections to learn all you can about Absalom's plans. I will await word from you about what is happening. You can send your sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, with any messages." David then went up to the Mount of Olives to pray. He believed this whole situation was his fault. He humbly sought God's intervention. When the rest of his company saw his example, they too turned to God in heartfelt prayer. While David was still praying, one of his acquaintances brought some bad news. David's trusted advisor, Ahithophel, had deserted him and was helping Absalom. Worse, Ahithophel was apparently one of the masterminds behind Absalom's plot. This hurt David terribly. Dropping to his knees again, David prayed, "God, please turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." David knew that the talented and capable Ahithophel could really help Absalom, but God could stop it. At this point, Hushai, the Archite, caught up to David. He was an intimate friend and top advisor to David.
"I finally found you," said the old man.
"I came as soon as I heard the news. Where are we going? What's the plan?"
David was very glad to see this man and to know his loyalty. "I am afraid you won't be coming with us," David told his friend. "The way is too long and strenuous." Hushai's countenance fell. He was visibly hurt by these words. "Don't look so sad. I have an even more important job for you," David continued. "You need to be my eyes and ears in the palace while I am gone. Tell Absalom that you will be his servant, just as you have been my servant. Gain his confidence so you can defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. I know it is a dangerous job. You could be executed as a spy, but I wouldn't ask except that the situation is so desperate." The loyal Hushai rushed back to the city to prepare. As David began his trek down from the Mount of Olives, he spotted a man approaching with a couple of overly burdened donkeys. The donkeys had so much stuff on them that they appeared comically unbalanced. But it was the familiarity of their leader that interested David the most. When they got closer,
David recognized Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, the son of David's old friend Jonathan, and the grandson of Saul. Because of David's friendship with Jonathan, David had given Mephibosheth a place in the palace many years ago and thought of him as a son. "Are these supplies from Mephibosheth?" David asked, as Ziba drew near. "Those poor donkeys are practically buried underneath their loads. I have brought 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, and 100 summer fruits, and even a big bottle of wine," replied Ziba. "But this food isn't from Mephibosheth. This was my idea. I am sorry to have to tell you, but I thought you should know that Mephibosheth is planning to use all the chaos and fighting to assert his own claim to the throne. He still believes that Israel rightfully belongs to him." David was dismayed to hear that another person he considered family had turned on him because of Mephibosheth's treachery. "Once this is over, everything that was his will be yours," he said. "I won't forget your loyalty. I am so happy to have found favor in your sight, O king," Ziba replied. But Ziba had actually lied to David. Mephibosheth had not betrayed him. Ziba was scheming to discredit Mephibosheth to win favor with the king. The shocks to David had been adding up quickly. His beloved son Absalom turning against him, his most trusted advisor betraying him, Mephibosheth, whom he considered a loyal son, renouncing him for his own ambitions, and as far as he could determine, most of the nation rising up in arms against him. This drastic overnight turn of events was deeply humbling to David. And David was still in for more. God wasn't done correcting and working with him. God is a master at using trials to shape and develop our character.
Thwap!
Thud! Thump!
"What is going on? And what is that racket about?" David asked one of the soldiers who was riding next to him. "Some crazy lunatic up on the hill is running around throwing rocks and shouting insults and curses at us. He says his name is Shimei. I think he is a member of Saul's family," the soldier replied. David could then hear the voice of this outspoken critic.
"Run! That's right! Run away! You bloody man!"
shouted Shimei as another rock hit a pack mule, causing it to rear up.
"Finally, you're getting what you deserve for killing Saul and stealing his throne. Now God is taking it from you. Just like you took it from him, you had better run before Absalom kills you."
Turning around, David saw Abishai, one of his generals, ride up beside him. "This is ridiculous, to let this dog insult you like this," he exclaimed. "Just say the word, and I will cut off his head."
"No," David quickly replied. "Let him curse me. Maybe God is allowing it for a reason, just as he is allowing my son to do this thing. Doesn't this relative of Saul have even more reason to hate me? Perhaps God will see that I am being wrongfully accused and will have mercy on me and deliver us from Absalom."
David and his company kept marching east toward the Jordan Valley, patiently tolerating the insults of this man. Eventually, Shimei grew tired of following and went away. Meanwhile, Absalom marched his army into Jerusalem, with trumpets sounding and cornets playing. The gates opened wide,
Absalom rode through streets filled with cheering crowds, chanting, "Long live Absalom! Long live the king!" In a particularly prominent location stood David's friend, Hushai. "Long live the king!" he cried. As Absalom rode past, Hushai caught his eye. What Absalom didn't know was that Hushai was really cheering for David. Later that day, Absalom called Hushai. "Everyone knows you were my father's friend. Why didn't you go with him?" he asked. "Is this how you repay your kindness to him?" At first, Absalom was suspicious. But Hushai was a wise and respected advisor with powerful friends throughout Israel. If Hushai really did want to join him, Absalom knew he could be an important ally. Hushai's answer was what Absalom hoped for.
"I'm here because I belong to the man who is chosen by God and by all the men of Israel,"
Hushai replied.
"Just as I was your father's advisor, now I will serve in your presence."
Absalom unwisely took this shrewd, carefully phrased answer to mean that Hushai would now serve him loyally. Along with Ahithophel, Absalom now had David's two most important advisors on his side. Or so he thought. Turning to Ahithophel and the rest of his military council, Absalom asked, "What do we do next? The most important thing is to show the people you are absolutely committed to finishing what you started and that there will be no reconciliation with your father," counseled Ahithophel. "You need to do everything you can to cement your claim to the throne." David has left behind 10 of his concubines. You should openly make them your own. That way, anyone who is still hoping for a peaceful resolution will be forced to pick a side, and you are obviously the stronger. Absalom liked this advice and soon followed Ahithophel's suggestion. God allowed this sin to take place as part of the punishment that Nathan told David he would receive due to the sin with Bathsheba and for murdering Uriah the Hittite. God had told David that another man would take his wives in broad daylight, just as David had taken Uriah's wife, Bathsheba. Before we conclude this meeting, there is one more thing I suggest, said Ahithophel. Let me take 12,000 of our best troops and pursue David. I will go personally. If I leave tonight, we can catch him while he is weak and short of supplies, and before he has time to prepare, I will focus my attack on him. If his army flees, I will let them go. The memory of the battle will soon be forgotten. Israel will be at peace, and you will have your throne. Absalom was impressed and promised Ahithophel he would soon make a decision. He was about to give permission for Ahithophel's plan when he decided to ask Hushai what he thought. "Hushai, you have known my father for many years. What do you think of Ahithophel's plan?" Hushai knew that his time to help David had come. This was the moment he was hoping for, but he had to do it in the smartest way possible. He couldn't give even the slightest appearance of helping David. He also knew that he could never convince them not to attack David. But maybe he could buy David enough time to organize a strong army.
I do not think Ahithophel's idea is a good plan, said Hushai, as he scanned the skeptical expressions around the room. You know David as well as I do, and 12,000 men isn't nearly enough. Right now, he is like an angry bear. If you go down there with only 12,000, he will tear into you like a she-bear trying to defend her cubs. Right now, he is probably hidden away in a cave. If you go searching for him, you will find him all right, but only when you least expect it. And when he attacks you, even if the battle is inconclusive, and only a few of your men die, rumors will spread that your troops have been slaughtered. Then even the hearts of the bravest of your allies will melt because all Israel knows that your father is a mighty warrior and the men that are with him are valiant soldiers.
Hushai could tell he was making an impact. He could practically see the council members recalling the stories of David's astounding victories over the Syrians, Moabites, and Philistines. And what was that he detected? Maybe a little fear in their eyes too? Not in Absalom's, only haughty defiance there.
Hushai continued, I would advise you to gather all Israel from north to south, from Dan to Beersheba. Make an army so great that it is like the sand of the sea. Then you, riding at the head of this grand army, for all the people to see, should lead it to victory. That way, you will have so many men that when you find your father, you will be able to completely overwhelm him so he doesn't have a chance. Or if he tries hiding in a city, then you will have so many men you could literally drag down the walls with ropes.
As he finished his speech, Hushai once more looked into the eyes of Absalom and the other members of his council and saw that he had won. They were convinced that Hushai's counsel was superior to that of Ahithophel. Hushai is right, said Absalom. Assemble a grand army. Absalom fell for Hushai's trap. But it wasn't really because of any eloquence on Hushai's part. It was because it was God's trap. Now, David could have the time he desperately needed to rest and build up an army. But he wasn't out of danger yet. While Absalom made preparations for assembling a massive army, Hushai secretly went to visit Zadok and Abithar, the priests, and told them what Absalom was planning.
We must get a message to David as quickly as possible, he said. David said you would have a way of contacting him.
Zadok and Abithar called a trusted servant girl to take a message to their two sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, who were living in a small town outside of Jerusalem, where they would be less conspicuous. The two young men immediately set out to warn David of Absalom's plans. However, Absalom had many spies too. One of them spotted the young men and reported back to Absalom, who recognized that something could be amiss. Jonathan and Ahimaaz had a feeling they could be in danger. They did their best to keep to the low roads, but they could see groups of soldiers closing in. Somebody must have seen them. Other soldiers would surely be riding ahead to cut them off. That left them only one choice. They rushed to the house of a friend who was loyal to David There was no time to spare. The hooves of the soldiers' horses could be heard pounding the cobblestone road. The soldiers were in the neighborhood, searching for the lads. "Climb down into the well," said the man of the house, "and don't make a sound. If they hear you, that will be the end of us all." The two youths quickly climbed down inside the dark well. After the lid was closed, the woman of the house threw a blanket on top and pretended to be drying a large pile of grain. It wasn't a moment too soon. Soldiers burst into the courtyard.
"Where are Amimaz and Jonathan?"
demanded an especially burly-looking soldier.
"We know they came this way."
The woman told the soldiers that they had been there but had already left and crossed over the brook. The soldiers quickly searched the house before dashing off to continue the pursuit. With the soldiers gone, the youths came out and continued their critical journey. They successfully made it to King David and warned him about Absalom's plans. Upon hearing what was happening, David ordered his small army to head east and cross the Jordan River. There, they would be safer in case Absalom changed his mind and decided to attack immediately. When Ahithophel's spies reported spotting David's army crossing the Jordan, he knew that Absalom had not taken his counsel. Ahithophel realized this would be Absalom's undoing and that he would fail. Now that David was being allowed to escape, this would give him time to gather soldiers from Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben, tribes that lived on the east side of the Jordan. He also knew that even though Absalom was in control of Jerusalem, once people realized that David was building an army, they would be more likely to join him. Ahithophel realized, with a grief-stricken conscience, that his whole scheme was doomed and that once David was back in charge, he would probably be killed as a traitor. That night, this brilliant advisor, who had served David so well but then betrayed him, returned to his home and hung himself. After David crossed the Jordan, he set up his new field headquarters at Mahanaim, a small city near the border of the tribes of Gad and Manasseh. Word began to spread throughout Israel that the king had been betrayed by his son, that he was in desperate need of soldiers, but that his elite guard was still loyal, that the eastern clans were rallying to his banner, that the Ammonite king, Shobai, had repledged his support and was sending supplies, that the mighty men of Israel were coming to David's aid. And from the highways and the byways, David's army began to grow. Macha of Lodibar and Barzillia of Rogelim, two prominent chiefs from the tribe of Manasseh, sent beds, basins, cooking utensils, and food. Supplies of wheat, barley, flour, beans, honey, butter, cheese, and sheep, enough to supply an army, were gladly donated. Soon, so many soldiers had arrived that David needed to reorganize the army. He ordered a thorough count and divided the force into three parts. He put Joab, Abishai, and Ittai in charge. Meanwhile, Absalom's grand army was drawing near. Although it was much bigger than David's, it wasn't as large as Absalom had originally envisioned. When Absalom's informers reported that David's army was growing rapidly, Absalom decided he should attack before David got any stronger. Still, the great size of his army made him feel self-assured and confident. David's puny army wouldn't be much of a match, he thought. The battle will be over quickly. To be continued in our next episode, and continue the adventure by reading the Bible story. Find it under the Resources tab at pcg.church.